sometimes we have the tendency that when we win a tournament to, or when we win in, on a day, like think it's okay to just like sit back and rest. And I think celebrating is great, but I think if your rest becomes unproductive for the next day, like that's where it doesn't help. And I think hours and hours of practice kind of got that mindset in me. And I think that was ultimately keeping it simple and having that mindset of not resting a ton, but, or not letting my resting be unproductive, I think was like the biggest thing that made me play pretty good golf in 2020.
This is The Tournament Code.
Thanks for taking the time to join us today, David. Most of us have met you. Jack knows you. And so it's fun to get to kind of talk about things that we've talked about off air here, and learn more about your career and kind of what's got you where you got and where you're going. Before we get into that, Jack has put together our Puttview Books opening tee shot. Puttview Books sponsors us, keeps on the lights for us. My lights are a little dim right now, but the more episodes we crank out, maybe my lights will get a little bit brighter. So Jack's going to get us with a Puttview Books opening tee shot, and we'll see what sort of icebreaker question Jack has for us today.
David, can you name the five left-handed golfers to win a major championship?
No, but I can try. Brian Harman, Mike Weir, Phil Mickelson.
Just a hint. There are five total. Three have happened since 2000, and there's one way back that I don't think anybody here is going to get, and I had no clue. So good
luck.
Three
since 2000.
Three since 2000, Harman, that's Phil. Mickelson. Yeah.
Since 2000. You said three have happened since when?
Sorry. Four of the five have happened after 2000. One was in 1963.
Okay.
Bubba Watson.
I said Bubba Watson.
Oh, Bubba.
No, okay. I didn't hear you. My bad.
That's four. Good work.
So we're at four. For those keeping track at home, Brian Harman, Bubba Watson, Mike Weir, and Phil Mickelson. A lot of Augusta going on. Okay. 1963 and Open Championship.
Don't tell us.
1963 okay. Open Championship.
Where is that one held at?
I'm efforting right now. Sorry.
Okay.
That's a good verb.
Efforting. I respect
it. It was at
that.
Royal Living in St. Anne's.
I got nothing, man. I only know a few from back then.
Bob Charles. A, I don't think I'd ever heard of him. B, no clue he was left-handed, but those are the five.
I'm going to respect that he's real human, but that's a long time ago for me to remember. I only remember a few from back then, and there's one dude who won a U.S. Open, and now I'm blanking on his name, Mormon guy, laid up on the par three all 4 days at Olympic Club.
Billy Casper,
that's it. Yep. Thank you, Cooper. That's the only one I can really remember from back then besides a few Arnolds and Jacks. Well, sweet. Another left-handed golfer obviously is here. So, David, tell us kind of what you're up to right now, where you are in life, golf, et cetera, and we'll kind of work from there.
Yeah, I'm a senior at UNC right now, my fourth year at UNC Chapel Hill. We're right now, we got a break in tournaments, so it's November right now, like late November. I don't play again until early, mid-January. Just finished the fall season with the guys. Had an okay fall, got better every event. Felt like the team was really trending upward when we finished the fall, which was great. As a team, we're working really hard right now. And as far as golf goes, I'm just trying to get better every day. Life is a lot of golf and a lot of nutrition and a lot of stretching right now. Just working on my body a ton. Trying to get better, trying to do homework. Just doing a lot of little things well right now. And yeah, focusing on golf while I can.
What does an off season look like for you guys? Or for you, well, not for you guys, for you in particular, what are you doing in the off season, both with teamwork that's going on, and also with your 20 hours, and then also with outside of that?
As far as team goes, there's NCAA restrictions for how much we can be together as a team, I believe, or at least be competing as a team or practicing, preparing as a team. So we're working out a ton. We're working out 5 days a week. We're having a practice 1 day a week. And then when we were in season, it was practice 4 or 5 days a week and then working out 3 days a week. So a little bit of a change there, just more working out and then more practice on our own as a team. And we're just really getting after it as a team, honestly. Like, I think there's probably a lot of teams that are doing that in the country right now. So we're doing, yeah, a lot of working out, a lot of golf. And then me individually, I kind of thought that once the fall was over, like mid-October, late October, I'd be pretty ready to just take a break. And I think I can rest pretty quickly. My break lasted maybe a few days, and then I was pretty much ready to go. I thought there would be more time of me eating ice cream and sitting on the couch, but it's really just been more fun to practice and eat well. So I've been doing that a ton, trying to stay as consistent as possible and really just having a lot of fun with working on short game and working on the right things, resting my body up for a big, busy spring.
So I know there's a couple big-ish tournaments that you could choose to play in over the winter. There's like the Jones Cup, South Beach International down in Miami. Are you going to play in a couple of those or just wait until college to kick it back up?
Yeah, I thought about doing South Beach, but I'm going to go on vacation near that time. So I'm out for that one, and I'm just going to do Jones Cup, and then I got one pro event overseas that I'll be playing in. But yeah, Jones Cup is kind of the big amateur one I'm looking forward to.
What's the pro one that you're doing?
It's called the Hero Dubai Desert Classic.
That's a super big deal. So have you played in pro events like that before?
Yeah, so I played in three PGA Tour events. Never played in a DP World Tour event, which I think that's what this one is. Really excited to go to Dubai. And I guess it might not be official yet. It's going to be official in 3 days. But yeah, really, really excited for it. Already technically got the invite, so it's official in my head, I guess. But yeah, it's a really good players, a fun place to travel to. The weather should be really hot, so yeah, it'll be good.
How do you approach playing in big tournaments like that?
The exact same as any other day. I think, like, I've always said that when I'm at my best, I'm preparing for a tournament like it's the next day. Like every single day of the year, I'm acting like there's a tournament the next day. So it's going to be the same thing once I get to mid-January. It's just going to be another day of preparation. And I actually had the thought today, like, if I had to go play a tournament tomorrow, I'd feel ready. And I think that's kind of where I want to be at going into that tournament in Dubai, or even going into 10 years from now if I'm still playing golf, or tomorrow. It's just I want to keep doing the same things and keep getting better every way I can.
Do you think that routine of like taking every day one by one really helps you, like, no matter where you're at, on what state, whatever stage you're at, it like helps you kind of like bring the nerves down and just being like trusting your preparation? I know, at least speaking from personal experience, I really struggled with, like, you get in a bigger event and you kind of mentally psych yourself out. Could you talk about that for anybody listening?
That's an area where I have a lot of experience in, because I've been nervous so many times. Like, I feel like I get more nervous than everybody else out there. I can't eat very well on the course, even though I need to eat really badly, and just get like super, super nervous. So I remember the times where I've been super nervous before, and there hasn't been a time where I've executed poorly when I've been super nervous, like at least not recently, which is super encouraging. But it does feel like I'm going to execute poorly a lot of times when I'm nervous. So I think, like, the preparation that I do every single day that I'm practicing and preparing for a tournament, that preparation doesn't necessarily make the nerves go down for me, but I think it does give me more confidence even when I am nervous. So I've never experienced being more calm in a tournament that's really high stakes because I'm prepared, but I've been able to be confident when I'm nervous. So it's like I think Tiger always said, like, he doesn't get nervous. Like, what's there to be nervous about? But I have not figured that out yet. So I'll keep getting nervous, but like keep being confident while I'm nervous.
So when you step up over a ball and you're nervous but confident while you're nervous, what do you think allows you to get up there and with those nerves not psych yourself out? Or not hit just a horrendous shot?
It might be a little difficult for me to like pinpoint a specific thought for me. I think it kind of changes. Some of the main things that I've learned really over the last like 5 years, there's a tournament back in 2020, a few tournaments in a row actually, where I had the lead and played terrible coming down the stretch. And then the next week, had the lead, played terrible coming down the stretch. COVID hit that early 2020, came back first tournament in June, And I didn't care about anything else. I just had to play well when I was nervous. That was my only goal for the tournament. I had a two-shot lead going into the final round, and I didn't care how I hit it. I didn't care how I played. The only thing I focused on was staying super level-headed mentally and staying in rhythm. And I think I did those two things really well that day, and I didn't hit it amazing, but I ended up winning, and the score ended up being pretty good for the game I had. So I think, like, just overall, like, when I'm nervous, the two things I focus on are staying in rhythm. Staying in rhythm, sticking to my process is a big one too. So if I had to put my finger on it, it's like level attitude, staying in rhythm, and sticking to my process. And like, it's pretty cliche, pretty easy, but or pretty simple, but it's actually like more difficult to do when you have scoreboards and you have cameras and you have people around you telling you what you're at. Like, you just got to go back to what you do well, and staying in rhythm and believing in myself and sticking to my processes are some of those things.
What does your process look like?
It's pretty simple. I think for over the shot, or when I get to the shot, if it's a tee ball, I mean, I'm getting my plan in the practice round for what club I'm going to hit. Check out where wind is before I select a club. Once I select the club, I have a compass in my pocket actually that I pull out, and I started doing it in 2020 at the South Beach Am. And I think it's become a nervous tick for me just to take out my compass when I'm nervous. And so check the compass before I take any practice swings, make sure I know where the wind is at. It's a few practice swings, not really too into how many practices I'm taking. It's kind of just a feel thing. Yeah. And then like once I have my number, like I'm getting that number and I'm going, and it's a lot of like being aware of where I'm at, how quickly I'm moving. Cause like first tee shots, I'll move really, really slow. And then on the sixth hole from the middle of the fairway to an easy pin, like I'm cooking. Like I'm not moving that slow. But if I'm going over water, like I'm moving slow because like there is nerves there. So just staying in rhythm and make sure I know where my rhythm is at, and then doing the things to get me to that place where I'm ready to hit the ball. I think it's different for everybody, but for me, those are a few things that help: the compass and just knowing where I'm at timing wise.
I want to talk about the compass, because that's probably one of my, both Cooper's and my favorite little pet theories that we haven't fully fleshed out, but it's at least how we do things when we prepare, which is we write down the wind direction before the day, the speed, and then we just use a compass, or if we've written already down in the yards book what direction is what, like if the yards book has a compass in there, we might use that. And that's how we play the wind. We found it generally to work well, as opposed to trying to figure out whether something's swirling and into you or anything like that. It sounds like that's kind of the path you take, but how do you prepare for and deal with the wind?
Yeah, I definitely do some of that. I think there's a healthy level of preparation before the round that goes into wind for me, but it's so week to week. I mean, at Wilmington, the wind was pretty consistent the last tournament I played in the fall. And then at Olympia Fields, it was kind of a nightmare for me. The compass told me more than what the day. So basically when I look at the weather forecast before, if it says southeast, I got out to Olympia Fields and the wind was not really southeast. It was maybe more south than southeast. And then it might shift throughout the day. So there is a certain level of preparation that goes into like, okay, where is the wind northeast? And I need to know that. I need to know if it's northeast or northwest or wherever it might be. But there is an element of like, I feel like I'm at an advantage because a lot of guys aren't as aware to the wind with the wind as I feel like I am. And if the wind is more off the left on a shot, like my teammates all 4 years think I'm absolutely insane because I'll hit a shot and I'll say like, man, like that wind is definitely off the left and there's like 1 mile an hour. And I don't think there's ever been somebody to agree with me on when there's like hardly any wind or hardly any hurt, but it really is like a feel thing for me. And I have a lot of confidence in myself judging the wind. And because of that, I feel like when the wind is switching, like I can adjust the numbers at least really well for relative to the conversations I've had with some of my teammates.
You've been a really elite player for a very long time. I'd like you to talk to us some about your junior golf career, when you first started remembering having some success and what kind of tournaments you were playing in?
I think there's a few like benchmarks that I look back to and be like, man, like I remember stuff clicked here. And I really feel like I had figured out at least a little bit of who I am as a player at these tournaments. I think August 2018 was the first one where I was like, okay, I could actually play. I knew I had the work ethic and the belief and the desire, but August 2018, I played a junior all-star AJGA event out in California, and the field was actually pretty good. It shaped up to be pretty good. I think the top five were – four out of the top five were me, my brother, Omar Morales, and Scotty Kennan. So it was a solid event. I think I won that one by one or two shots, and then had a solid end of 2018, won a few events, was just playing good golf, carried that into 2019, and then got into some bigger events, played in some invitationals, got a bunch of top tens, had a bunch of a few times where I didn't close out the deal on a big event like Sage Valley. I think I was in the lead or one back, and then the Dustin Johnson World Junior, I was tied for the lead in 2020 in March and finished double. 6-5-7 to lose by 7. So those were kind of two events where I was like, man, I need to get better. And it wasn't a work ethic thing. It wasn't like, I'm not working hard enough. It's like, what do I need to get better at? And like, it's pressure golf. It's competing hard when I need to, and making sure my game is in a spot going into every event and being super consistent with that. So I kind of got to work like COVID time, like I said earlier, and played great in 2020, like really just had a little bit of momentum winning at Sedgefield in 2020 in an AJGA event. And then from there, honestly, yeah, like just started winning. There were some bad events. I think I got like 100th at the Western AM at Crooked Stick. I got 9th at my state AM, which I felt terrible about. It's just my home course and just didn't play great. But yeah, that 2020, I think I just had a ton of confidence showing up to events and really believing that I was the best player at those events and trusting my preparation, like we talked about. But yeah, I think as far as junior golf goes, that stretch in 2020 from a lot of top tens early on, and then from June to November, really just, yeah, winning a bunch of junior events was a huge confidence booster.
So what were the steps that you took to become better at playing pressure golf? Because I know it's like, it's not really something that you can go back home and work on, like if it was your putting or chipping or something like that. You kind of have to be in the moment to get better at it.
There's definitely a few different things that my brain goes to. I think the biggest theme was that I kept it super simple. So I knew my game was in a good spot because I put myself in spots to win the two tournaments in the 2 weeks before COVID. I was super confident where my game was at. I was just frustrated with the fact that I didn't win. So I kept it super simple from a physical standpoint. I worked on what I need to work on just with golf swing stuff and maintaining my golf swing, not doing anything crazy there. And then I started experimenting more with short game, I remember. I have a few videos on my phone that I look back to back in 2020 of it was just me in a bunker or me chipping and hitting these crazy shots around the chipping green. So a lot of self-discovery and experimenting with chipping. And then I didn't putt much, honestly, I felt like I had that huge growth period in those 2 months of COVID from like March to May of 2020. I didn't putt that much because the cups were raised at the course I was playing at. So we played on raised cups. I shot 58 once on raised cups, and like it was a 58, but it was raised cups. So it doesn't count, but I was extremely nervous. I mean, I was striping it. Like I had a bunch of confidence from raised cups, I think. And once I got that confidence of, okay, my game is good enough. And then I had a few people I played with, Wade Watson, Ava Merrill, and my brother. Shout out to them. Honestly, we played pretty much every single day during COVID. And once I got the confidence of my game is good enough and like I'm beating these people right now, like I haven't lost in a little while. Like once I had that confidence, it was kind of just like, keep doing what I'm doing, keep riding this wave. And I was able to do that for like a really long time. And I think everyone works differently, but I think sometimes we have the tendency that when we win a tournament when we win in on a day, like think it's okay to just like sit back and rest. And I think celebrating is great, but I think if your rest becomes unproductive for the next day, like that's where it doesn't help. And I think I hours and hours of practice kind of got that mindset in me. And I think that was ultimately keeping it simple and having that mindset of not resting a ton, but or not letting my resting be unproductive, I think was like the biggest thing that made me play pretty good golf in 2020.
Could you explain to us what productive rest looks like for you? Like, say not on the golf course, but what are you doing like body wise, nutrition wise? What does that look like for you?
I think it's something I'm still learning, but I think, for example, this is an example of unproductive rest, which I felt the effects of for a week after. I won a tournament this fall in October, and I'd been waiting so long to just eat a bunch of ice cream. And I was so excited to eat ice cream because I'd eaten so healthy this whole fall. And this is like a month ago. And they had this pecan pie right after I won, ate a slice of that, like fine, 70 grams of sugar. I've never eaten that much like in the last year. And then right after that, went and got ice cream with the team, another 40 grams of sugar at least. And then like in my head, it's like, all right, we're celebrating, like this is fine. But with where my body's at, like I can't be doing that if I want to play golf the next day and like play effectively. So then it kind of like, there was a little bit of a time for like 2 or 3 days where I was like, man, like this is not where I want to be right now. And I think like those little things like that have the, like they can have the effect of bringing down confidence when like I should be as confident as anybody in the world. Like there shouldn't be a day where I go out to the course and be like, man, I might lose a chipping contest to this guy. But because of my rest wasn't productive, it was eating ice cream. I think that was where I could have been better. And then as far as productive rest goes, I think for me, like there's tons of instances where I can point to in days, but a good example is actually last night. It was kind of a rest day for me a little bit, just worked on a lot of short game and did homework in the morning. So not a crazy workload, especially in the off season. But when I got back home, I watched football I watched the Auburn game. I mean, it took forever. We played Texas A&M, but I watched it for like 4 hours at least. And it was just like after that, I just was not ready to hit a golf ball the next morning. And so it's like things like that where I don't think watching a football game is bad. Like I don't think there's any harm to that. But I do think like for me, if I'm trying to keep my body ready to play, like I don't need to sit on the couch for 4 hours and just be unproductive in that. And I think when I'm in season and playing week to week, I do a really good job of not doing that. But yeah, I think it's just being mindful of the fact that if I'm not careful like that, the little times where I'm not resting in a way that's good for my body and good for my heart, honestly, then I could fall into like a little dip in confidence, which isn't what I want.
Yeah, so you definitely take nutrition extremely seriously, much more seriously than most college golfers I know, let alone college students. So tell us about how that became so important to you. What is some of the, maybe you read a book about it, maybe you listened to podcasts about it to formulate your understanding on nutrition, but what are some of the things that got you so interested in this?
I think it all started back in 2021. I got injured back in 2021, February 2021, after I was playing that great golf in 2020. I had a back injury in 2021, was out for like pretty much 3 months, on and off 3 months, and yeah, was just like hurting, didn't know why. I got a bunch of different diagnoses, like 11 of them at least. And then came back to playing golf. Freshman year, 2021, played golf, played well. Sophomore year, played well. Still having a little bit of back pain though. Like body wasn't great, couldn't hit as many balls. And then junior year hit, this is last year. I mean, my body started to feel like a little bit worse. And I was like, okay, maybe I need to start looking at how to make myself feel better. So I looked into nutrition a little bit and just the ways to reduce inflammation, because that's honestly what I was feeling. And I noticed like when I didn't honestly, once I started eating better, just talked to my trainer a good bit, read a few things, I didn't notice a huge difference in like how amazing my body felt. Like I don't feel like it feels amazing, but I do notice on the days where I eat poorly that my body feels terrible. So I think talking to my trainer, Eric Hernandez, he's super into nutrition. So he's been a huge resource for me. Talking to him a lot about what to eat has been helpful. And then, yeah, I think just learning every day is really.
So is that mainly just like eliminating sugars to reduce inflammation? Is that kind of the main thing that you focus on? Eliminating sugars, eating enough protein?
Yeah, I think the sugars is definitely the main one. That's like the first thing that I cut out of, like, this can't be good for me. Processed sugar especially. And then just like not eating too many carbs as well. I've noticed that makes my body feel worse. I've noticed recently that when I overeat, so when I eat a ton of food, and like I can put down some food. I don't know how you guys are, but like I love eating. I think Bergstrom, you love eating too. I think Dark told me that.
Love it. It's great.
I've noticed that makes my inflammation go up a little bit. So yeah, I think it's just like knowing that I want to eat like some form of protein in a meal, some vegetable or fruit. And like, if I get that, I'm good. And that's kind of where I'm at right now. I'm eating a lot of like black beans, sweet potatoes, chicken, beef, bison.
So what are you doing on the course to eat?
I'm still learning about that. Right. Recently I've been doing a lot of beef sticks and,
from experience, I will say it's like actually pretty tough. If you're trying to not eat as many carbs or not eat as many sugars, it's kind of hard to find, you know, the right thing that will give you a good boost of energy, like when you need it on the back nine. Because experience, like eating like nuts or something like with only protein, like a protein shake or nuts, never really was as helpful as, say, you know, something with sugar in it.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm actually meeting with a nutritionist tomorrow to figure out more about that. But I think for me, just what makes my body feel best is eating a lot of like beef and sunflower seeds and nuts. So like, I think I'm going to experiment with pecans. I just had one for the first time by itself in like a few years, I feel like. And I was like, this is amazing. So I'm going to be eating some pecans, a lot of beef sticks. I love the Chomps beef sticks. They're grass fed, 10 grams of protein. So a lot of beef sticks, a lot of nuts, a lot of sunflower seeds, and then electrolytes. And I do have to eat a lot, like in order to sustain that. Oh, bananas too. Bananas and oranges. I actually figured that out this spring. It was super helpful. I say figured it out like nobody else has ever thought of that before. But like I was just eating like Uncrustables and stuff. And like that's a quick 300 calories, but I'd be crashing on like 12 holes later. So. Yeah, I think like I got to eat a lot to sustain me, but ultimately it does fuel my body better than like Uncrustable or something.
It's insane how many good products they have now in that genre that you can get that are at least – so the way I kind of look at it is in levels because I'm similar in how I eat, et cetera. And it makes it, frankly, for me to where I don't even – like I'm not doing as – much as you are for the most part. I'm sitting behind a desk all day and working out in the mornings and then taking care of stuff around the property, like in the evenings and on the weekends. But I find that it's a lot easier when I cut out, when I start eating real food, I don't overeat almost ever because I don't know. I get a lot of the signal. I know about what I should be eating. I kind of feel, okay, here's kind of what I think I need. And what do you know? It usually matches up with what I'm looking for. And the way that I look at the foods is like, all right, so there's just highly when you think about sugars, there's highly processed sugar and that's not good. And then level B is like, okay, it's not as bad for you. We're using monk fruit or something else. We're not using like sucralose or anything like that. We're using monk fruit, stevia, still artificial or still sweeteners, but real sweeteners that the effects are less bad. And then at least the top tier for me, if you're going to have sweeter things, are things that are like much more naturally occurring in nature. Like I'll highly recommend, if you haven't already tried, True Made has a bunch of good stuff. They have ketchup, so you're not eating high fructose corn syrup. I'd have to go back and look down, but the ketchup is essentially tomato, apples, carrots, like, and blend all, you don't see it, but it's like it's real food. And you look at the ingredient list, like, man, this is real food. Like, I'm sure not all of it's organic, but I'm frankly not even that concerned about it for those ones. But like the fact that you can get real food is really nice. And I promise to ask a question here in a second, but the interesting thing about intuitive eating is just how far away we've fallen from it, or at least like don't notice it. Whereas cows will eat grass. And then if you give them a bunch, like that, you can give them a mineral blocks, which is just a bunch of minerals all together, or you can give them a buffet of minerals and they will eat the grass and be able to tell what minerals they're missing in the grass. And if you have a buffet of minerals, they'll be able to go over and get those minerals. And then obviously the cool part about it is this, that their manure will have those minerals in it, and the minerals will go back in the ground, eventually restore the earth to the balance of whatever minerals that the ground is depleted in. And it's the same thing for us. We can intuit things better, I think, if we eat more real things. When it comes to, and I apologize if I missed this, how are you measuring inflammation?
Honestly, just based off feel right now, like just how it feels in my back is like the main thing. Back and hips are the first two things that I feel inflamed, and it's more of like a feeling thing. Like, yeah, my body feels pretty bad today. What did I eat last night? And then do that over a course of 2 years for every day, and you start to figure out like which ones make your body feel better.
You don't look at your stomach and be like, man, I'm super bloated.
Yeah, I don't know. Both of my parents are pretty skinny, so I guess I haven't hit that yet.
That makes sense. When it comes to finding the right things to eat and playing golf, eating on the course, et cetera, we've talked about how you're trying to improve things. You're going to talk with a dietitian shortly. I know this is not an answer. You won't know the answers to the questions, but what sort of things are you going to be asking the dietitian? What things do you want answers to?
Yeah, I think the main thing is like red meat. Just how I've read some things that can cause inflammation, but I really like red meat, like bison and beef, and I eat a good bit of it. So yeah, I think that's going to be my first question, and I'm hoping that I don't know exactly what she'll say. I'm hoping she says that as long as I eat it in good quantities, that I'm not eating a ton of it, that it won't lead to inflammation. But I think more than anything, just asking her about like the meat stuff, and then what kind of sugars affect me differently. So like sugars in fruits versus sugars in Uncrustables, stuff like that. And I think like I've researched it some, but I think it'd be better to, when she answers a question about how that affects me, then ask her like, okay, what should I eat on the course then? Like, what is her ideal like plan for me on the course? And luckily I know a good bit right now about what makes me feel good and what my trainer has said I should eat, and knowing that works. So just kind of gaining more information as to why that would work and why it might not work, I think is what I'm hoping for.
Do you like to read or listen to books?
Definitely read. I haven't read many nutrition books, but
I have a few that I can think of right now that I'll send over to you in the next couple of weeks. I'll write it down. But there are some ones that I've found very helpful. Again, kind of explaining, cool thing is we've been alive for, not us individually, but as a species, as humans, we've been alive for a pretty long time. And a lot of the things we eat during those times, our body expects those types of things. And as we move closer to that, then eating how we've always eaten, as opposed to a lot of the stuff that has been made to make us want to eat it.
Yeah.
I won't go off on a tangent there. So we've talked some about obviously where you're at right now, kind of optimizing around what golf looks like. I want to talk a little bit about your golf swing itself. You'd mentioned earlier, you know, I get up there, I try to stay prepared every day. What do you do golf swing wise, and who do you work with?
For me right now, what I've learned is it's super important for me to keep my golf swing in a good spot throughout the course of a long period of time, and not to deviate from that too much. So one thing that I'm pretty certain of works for me is I don't hit that many golf balls. And the ultimate reason why is because my body can't handle that many golf balls. Ever since that injury in 2021, I can't hit as many golf balls as I used to. So I usually hit 30 or 45 minutes of golf balls per day. And that's about it. And I do all my, it makes me have to be focused and diligent when I am hitting. And I just work on maintaining the same positions in my golf swing, make sure I can curve it both ways, make sure the ball is doing what I want it to do, and not overthinking it really. Like, I think people get caught up in getting the perfect golf swing or hitting the perfect shot. And I see a lot of harm in that more than I see good. Just observing teammates and players and what works for me and watching myself do that. It just seems like working on maintaining the same positions every single day over a long period of time is going to get me a lot better than deviating every day and hitting a draw one day and a fade the next day. It's kind of just knowing my game and working on that every day. It's nothing insane. It's not rocket science.
And who do you work with?
Yeah, Chris Moore is his name. It's actually funny. I've worked with him for like 9 years now. And I think a lot of the things that I say regarding getting better in golf swing are things that I've discovered with him. So like he's told me to keep things simple for ever since we started working together. Like that's the one thing he said every single time. And he tells that to everybody, but it's cool how I feel like some of my mental game and approach to getting better is built off of what he teaches. Of just, you gotta believe in the work you're doing. You gotta have a coach who forces a player to believe in themselves. And it's just, yeah, it's a lot of that for a long period of time, for like 9 years now.
So I know we're coming up on time. I want to ask one question, and that is for you to walk through for us how a tournament week looks for you. So let's say you get two practice rounds. What are you doing in those practice rounds? What are you doing before your tournament rounds? What are you doing after your tournament rounds? How do you evaluate it after you play?
It's a little bit different for each tournament. This is something I've thought about more this semester in particular. But I think for, say it's a college event, I'll have less time in a college event than I do on any given PGA Tour week or professional tournament week. Every pro golfer I've talked to that's fresh out of college has agreed with me. It sounds crazy for me to say because you think of the grind of professional golf and it's not easy. It's a ton of travel. But college golf tournaments, at least for me, are you fly in either the night before or the day of. You play a practice round. That might be your only practice round, or you get one other. If I get one other practice round, that's a huge blessing because that's one extra day to take care of my body. But then you wake up and you either play 18 holes, and it takes forever, or you play 36 holes and then 18 holes, and you're gassed after the practice round because you just got off a flight like not that long ago. And then you're going to a 36-hole day. You're gassed after that day. And then you're waking up the next day early, doing the same thing, then flying home. So it's like a legit like 4-day marathon. Whereas tour events is like a 6-day long week. The ones I've played in, it's like I get there and I'll spend like 8 or 9 hours like doing some light practice, mainly working on my body, but like doing stuff around the golf course to get myself like acclimated and prepared, which I just don't have the time to do at a college event. So that's like a huge disclaimer for like every tournament is different, I guess. But right now, if I'm going to a college event and I get two practice rounds, I usually spend one of the practice rounds putting more and then one of the practice rounds chipping more. And I don't overthink the lines off tees. I pick a target that I like and I hit that target. I think it's, yeah, you can get into the numbers if you want of tee shots, but I feel like if I'm hitting it good enough, then no tee shot should be too hard for me. So yeah, don't overthink it off the tee, and then just spending a ton of time around the greens, getting my hands ready with chipping, and then getting the speed down with putting. And it's nothing crazy in practice rounds. It's just trying to keep everything simple and build belief in my game more so than it is learning the course. And then once the tournament hits, it's usually early wake ups in college events. So sometimes like 4:30 wake ups, usually 3 hours before the tee time is when I wake up. I'll wake up, read the Bible for 30 minutes, get in the shower, go to the course, eat about 2 hours before my tee time, start stretching about an hour and a half before my tee time, start hitting usually about 45, 50 minutes before my tee time, like a 15-minute range session, nothing long, and then spend the rest of the time chipping and putting and head to the tee. Play the round. After the round, I usually do a good bit of work, and it's maybe 15 balls, but usually a good bit of work around the greens. So 15 balls on the range, maybe more, maybe less, just to get my swing where I need it to be. And then, yeah, a lot of short game, just making sure the chipping is maintaining the chipping and working hard on speed. And then do that the same thing however many days I have a tournament round. And then, yeah, stretching a lot in the hotel room and working on my body and maybe doing homework, maybe not. It's not as much of a long-term grind in college golf. You're playing a few events every few months, maybe event every 2 weeks. So it's definitely less of a grind than pro golf in that regard. But I think for the time you're playing, you got to be like, you got to be ready to play in college events in a short amount of time from when you get there to when you're teeing off.
You mentioned reading the Bible is your morning go-to routine. How do you use your faith and reflecting while you're on the golf course in a tournament to maybe settle your nerves or kind of get you through the round?
When I read the Bible in the morning, it's reminding me that, okay, like this golf tournament is important, but there's way bigger things than winning a tournament or shooting a good score. Like the things I'm learning on the golf course are meant to make me look more like Jesus and to share the gospel with other people that I'm playing with, that I'm around, and ultimately just to bring glory to Jesus. And a relationship with Jesus doesn't necessarily mean that I'm going to play better. But the perspective of the golf is not the most important thing in my life. It does give freedom and peace. And it can only be found in a relationship with Jesus. And it's super, super helpful in golf, in any area of life. Just because, like, if Jesus created life and everything in life, like the game of golf too, then he knows how it's played best. So I've kind of found a lot of peace in that, and a lot of freedom just from reading the Bible, from having scripture in my mind, and just like knowing Jesus on the golf course more has been honestly like the one thing that, like, if I leave the golf course, like, and I didn't get closer to Jesus, then like, it doesn't even matter really.
Thank you for that. And I know as we're wrapping up, but so you're going into your last semester here at North Carolina, looking forward to the transition to professional golf. What does improvement look like for you going into the next level? And what do you think you really need to work on as you make that change over from college to the professional ranks?
I think the biggest thing is staying consistent with the work I put in every day, keeping everything simple. I haven't played pro golf, obviously, like I haven't made the transition yet, but just seeing a few of my friends and being around a lot of guys who I played college with and then graduated and are pro, learning stuff from them about how good your short game has to be, how good your misses have to be. Two things that I feel like I do well. And then the third thing that I've noticed that like guys just kind of get away from is keeping everything really simple and knowing their game. I think once you have a lot of time on your hands in professional golf, it's easy to look around, and whether you're on the Korn Ferry Tour, PGA Tour, Mini Tour, like there's other guys trying to be great as well. So I think just not deviating from the work I'm putting in now is really big. And knowing that there's going to be distractions with club companies and amazing equipment and things that might be helpful, but ultimately I think like if I know this works, then sticking to my game, sticking to my process every single day when I'm in college and on tour, whatever tour that is, I think that's like the main thing that I'm looking forward to and continuing to do well.
What do you want your future to look like? What do you think it'll look like?
Yeah, I have no idea. I was actually talking about this with my friend today, right after church. I was like, man, there's a lot of uncertainty about my life. And I think that's, honestly, like if we're honest, that's probably a lot of people. Like you don't always know, like if your job's going to remain or what you're, especially coming out of college, like if I'm going to get married or if I'm going to have kids or if I'm going to play professional golf, if my body's going to make it to play professional golf, things like that, that are like legitimate worries. I don't 100% know what my future is going to look like. I think if I had to pick, I'd want to play golf at the highest level for the longest amount of time, just because I enjoy it a lot. But honestly, like anything else that I feel like the Lord wants me in, like his plan is going to be way better than anything I can think of. So I desire to play professional golf, to play at a really high level for a long time, whatever that looks like. But ultimately it's just getting better every day. And no matter where I'm playing, just having fun with it.
Excellent. Well, the last question we ask every guest is the same, which is if you go back to yourself as a junior golfer and tell yourself just one thing, what would that one thing be?
I think the biggest thing is that I've seen to be true in my life is the work you put in from years and years ago is really actually helpful for like years down the road. It's not like this immediate change that you always see in practice. And I think the reason why I worked so hard when I was younger and spent like just an absurd amount of time at the golf course, like more time than I can even fathom now. The reason why I did that is because I wanted results so quickly and I was getting beaten by people who I didn't want to lose to. And I wanted to get better so fast. And I think that I worked really hard, and I think it came pretty quickly, my results and success from the time I worked. But I really see the work I put in junior golf like 6, 7, 8 years ago coming to fruition now. And I see the ways that I've learned so much about my golf swing just because of my coach and how he's taught me to learn about my golf swing. I've learned so much about that and hours of experimenting and knowing my game. And it actually has helped me now more than it did back then. So I think just like the work that I put in, like it does matter for down the road. And I think so often we look for like, man, like I want the putting practice I did yesterday to work for today. And sometimes that's a case, but more often than not, it's like a little win over the long period of time, day by day, is like, that's what you're looking for. Not like this, I'm gonna go putt for 6 hours and be the best putter in the world starting tomorrow for the rest of my life. I think that's like the main thing I've learned looking back.
Very cool. Well, we appreciate you joining us. Where can people find you on social media, follow along with you?
David Ford Golf, I think, is my Instagram, and I think that's about it.
Excellent. Well, if you're listening to us, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. And please like, subscribe, leave a rating, all that fun stuff. And you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on X at Tournament Code. As always, we appreciate you joining us and look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.